Coming to you live from the Retroist Vault, Retro Radio Memories is on the air.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Retro Radio Memories podcast. Halloween is fast approaching, and this week we've picked a radio show for you that stars an actor who knows a bit about those things that go bump in the night.
Yes, it is the legendary Vincent Price. From the 1973 British Broadcasting Corporation's The Price of Fear, we present an episode that is simply called Fish, which was originally broadcast on October 20th, 1973.
Until you played this for me, Projectionist, I had never had the pleasure of hearing the series before. I was shocked that Vincent Price, well, played himself in the show.
Actually, there are a few broadcasts where Vincent Price presented the thriller of the week as an early adventure of his between acting jobs. Although he generally was just the host for the series. You will find, though, that he would always inject a little of his own life into the shows. Like in our episode this evening.
Yeah, Price was certainly what we would call a foodie. What with him being an accomplished chef himself. Of course, he gives it that Vincent Price twist in the case of Fish. In your mind's eye, you can't help but see him wickedly grinning at times as he regales us with a story that begins in Australia concerning a fellow actor named Greg Rusmark, a former co-star named Jane Willemsey, and her jealous husband, Richard. So join us on Retro Radio Memories as we find the horror in Fish.
The Price of Fear, brought to you by Vincent Price.
Hello there. Do you like fish? To eat, I mean, not to look at or catch. Well, I do. I am, in fact, one of the world's most compulsive piscivores. I find there is an almost ritual purity about fish. The Japanese, you know, eat their fish raw, shredding and flaking the flesh and dipping it into piquant sauces, soya, horseradish, that sort of thing. The effect can be delicious. A delicate point and counterpoint, air and descant, plucking at the palate. The taste can be exquisite. And yet if you should think too hard about those raw, gelatinous strips of fish, you may find the feel of them, the sight of them even, is somehow obscene. But then my attitude in these matters is colored by a most unnerving experience I underwent in Australia. I'll call this story simply Fish, because as each stage of the episode unfolded, it was impressed on my memory by some piscatorial piece of gastronomic delight. It started in a Sydney restaurant about 5 years ago, with a dozen of the celebrated rock oysters with lemon and cayenne pepper and all the usual trimmings. I was lunching with a young Australian, Greg Rusmark, an aspiring actor who wanted to come to work in London. We were just debating whether another half dozen would be sheer bliss or pure greed when suddenly...
Vincent? It is Vincent, isn't it? Vincent Price?
Well, yes.
Jane Willemsey? I don't suppose you remember. But we did once actually work on a film together.
Well, yes, I believe I do remember.
It was a long time ago.
At Elstree, wasn't it?
That's right.
I strangled you, didn't I?
Yes.
Oh, what a charming fellow.
Oh, but I only strangle the nicest people. Sorry, Jane. Let me introduce you to Greg Rusmark. He's also an actor.
An eminently unsuccessful one. Hello.
How do you do?
Won't you join us?
No, thank you very much. I must be going.
Are you working over here now, Miss Willemsey? In the theatre, I mean?
Oh, no. No, the theatre gave me up for dead, right after Vincent strangled me.
Well, I can't believe that I was that realistic.
Oh, it was probably just symbolic of something or other.
Don't you miss it, the theatre?
Maybe. But you can't have everything, can you?
Sure you won't join us, though. There seems so much we might talk about.
No, really, I can't. Richard's already waiting at the table, and he's due to start glowering any moment now.
Oh, that's a shame.
Look, how long are you here for?
Oh, just a week or so. I start filming in Hong Kong at the end of the month.
Why don't you come over to lunch with us on Sunday?
Well,
We're only over at Manly, and I'm a much better cook than I ever was an actress.
Well,
I'd love to come.
Oh.
Well, very well, then we'll both come.
Oh, well, fine. Well, it's number 6, Sandy Avenue. It's right Sandy on the beach. You can't miss us.
All right, till Sunday, then.
Anytime after 12?
We'll be there. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lovely woman.
I do apologize, Vincent.
Whatever for?
Morning in on your invitation like that, it obviously threw you.
Well, I suppose it did. I just wasn't expecting it somehow.
No, neither was she. I was trying to stampede you into accepting.
Well, you succeeded admirably. I don't see why, though.
Well, I thought that you were going to refuse.
Well, would that have been so disastrous?
Not to you, maybe, but it might have been to her.
But I don't see how it could have been. I haven't seen her for years, and I barely knew her even then.
Yes, I know, but there's just something about her. It's, well, it's sort of difficult to put your finger on, but the eyes were out of phase with the voice. All the while she was talking, the eyes looked, well, they looked hunted.
Oh, come on, Greg. Don't let your imagination run away with you.
Imagination be damned.
Imagination. What is imagination? A mental trick. A simple piece of sleight of mind that projects facts into fantasy, or fantasies into fact. Anyway, the following Sunday, Greg picked me up at my hotel and drove us out across the Sydney Harbour Bridge towards the North Shore and Manly.
The other day in the restaurant, Vincent, when Jane Willemsey introduced herself, did you really remember her right off, just like that?
Yes. She wasn't the sort of woman you'd forget easily, especially after her performance in that film.
Was she good?
In it, very good. On it, positively scandalous.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes, quite literally so. She brought the picture to a grinding halt about halfway through the schedule.
Well, how'd she manage that?
She ran off with the director. Oh, yes, she took off just like that. Left us, her husband, everybody flat and just took off. Believe me, it was no laughing matter.
Oh, it couldn't have been.
Well, at least it wasn't at that time. We had to get a new director in and a new lady for me to strangle. And we reshot every scene that Jane had been in. Oh, it was an absolute nightmare.
And what happened to her, Jane?
Well, she just disappeared. They both did. Off the set, out of the business, off the face of the earth, for all I knew. Her husband hired some inquiry agents to find them, and for a few weeks we were all up to our ears in private eyes. I sometimes wonder why he bothered. It could hardly have come as a surprise to him, not with a woman like that.
A woman like, what?
Well, she was younger then, of course, a lot more arrogant. She seemed to generate a sort of, sexual electricity. She had an almost animal magnetism that could devastate a man.
I'll tell you something, Vincent.
What?
She still got it. I wonder what her husband's like.
Well, more important, I wonder if he's a film director. or even an ex-film director.
I guess we'll soon find out.
We did, and he wasn't a film director. Jane's husband turned out to be a broker on the Sydney Stock Exchange, but even that turned out to be more of a sideline. His real occupation was swimming, surfing, yachting, all the classic activities of the professional outdoor type. Richard was a good outdoor cook, too. And what he could do with an open fire was beyond belief.
It's coming on nicely. Won't be long, Vincent.
You always eat al fresco like this, Richard?
We only make a thing of it at the weekends.
Well, I can think of worse ways of passing the time.
I'll race you back.
Right, you're off.
Come on.
Nice to see Jane enjoying herself so much.
God, I'm exhausted.
Well, I'm not surprised. That surf takes it out of you. Especially when you're not used to it.
Greg was... he was teaching me to ride the surf.
Yes, I saw.
Greg, what's that mark on you?
What? Where?
There, on your leg.
That's a birthmark.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's almost a family crest. Oh. It occurs at least once in every generation in our family.
What, always in the same place?
No, but it's usually on an arm or a leg somewhere, and it's always, but always, the same shape.
What?
You see? An open rose.
Oh, yes. Now you pointed out, it is like a rose.
My uncle, my grandfather, theirs were identical.
That's extraordinary. How far does that go back?
Well, you see, my family's name is Rosmark. I suppose originally it was Rosemark, but, God knows when that started.
Yeah.
Well, that really does smell delicious, Richard.
It's coming on.
What is it inside the tin foil, I mean?
It's a whole baked tie.
Is that that fish that looked like a snapper?
In fact, it is a snapper, but I always call it tie if I'm doing it Japanese style. There's no great difference anyway.
I thought the Japanese always ate their fish raw.
This is one case where they don't.
It really is very good eating. Richard carves it off in great chunks and you dip it in the shoyu sauce.
Well, I can hardly wait. Tell me, where on earth did you learn to cook food Japanese style, Richard? I find any style of cooking absolutely fascinating.
We were taught this by a party of Japanese stockbrokers that we took fishing.
What sort of fishing?
Tuna, barracuda, marlin, if you're lucky.
Oh, the big game bit, huh?
Richard has his own boat down the coast at Bermagui.
We charter it out most of the time, but we reserve a few odd weeks for ourselves.
You go fishing, Jane?
No.
He prefers to stay here.
I can imagine. It must be a far cry from Elstree to Bermagui.
Don't drag all that up, Rosmark. For Pete's sake.
Drag all what up?
The theatre, the bright lights and all that crap. She's much better off where she is. Aren't you, Jane?
Yes.
Did you two know each other before...
Before what?
Well, before Jane gave up the theater.
Why, yes, of course. I married her when she was still a drama student. And in the end, it was me who made her give it all up. Wasn't it, darling?
I could hardly believe it. This was the husband that she had left on her runaway romance. What could have happened? Had he found her, or had she come back to him? And what about the flyaway film director? What had happened to him? Well, when I got back to London, I mentioned his name around a few times to see if I got any response. I didn't. People remembered him, but no one had seen or heard of him since he had run off with that actress, as they put it. They'd both run off, of course. But only Jane had come back. I wondered, so dark a thought, it lodged unnoticed in the shadows of my memory until last year, when I went back to Australia, back to Sydney. Perhaps it was the same unnoticed thought that made me phone the one-time Jane Willemsey and her husband and to invite them both to dinner. I remember the occasion well. We had a quite extraordinary Australian hock with a quite excellent lobster a la Moricain.
How long will you be in Australia this time, Vincent?
Oh, only a few more days, and then I go to Japan for 8 weeks of filming. Might come back here after that, though, just for a short vacation trip.
Oh, Well, then you must come up to stay with us in Brisbane. It'd be lovely to
Brisbane?
See you.
Brisbane?
Yes. Didn't Richard tell you?
But tell me what, Richard?
We're moving house.
To Brisbane?
Just outside, actually.
But why?
Richard has decided to retire.
Retire? That's a bit premature, Richard. Surely you must be at least 20
years.
Yes,
but there's no point in waiting till you're too old to enjoy yourself, is there now?
Well, what will you do in Brisbane?
Fish. Mostly.
I've sold my business interests here in Sydney and invested in a couple of boats. Powerful engines, properly fitted out, you know, chair, rods, harpoons, flotation barrels, a lot. We can take anything. Sailfish, black marlin, or the big sharks, the tigers and the great whites.
Yes, but why do you go all the way up to Brisbane? I mean, why not stay in Bermagui?
That was Richard's decision.
The charter rates are much higher up in Queensland.
Oh.
Better fishing all the year round, too.
Richard's going to skipper one of the boats himself.
Well, what will you do, Jane?
I'm sure there'll be a great deal to keep me occupied.
You'll probably enjoy it once you get settled in.
We'll see. Have you seen Greg?
Greg? Oh, Greg Rossmark, you mean. Did he ever go to London? You know, I gave him my address and everything and...
No, he didn't go.
Why not?
Well, who can tell with a bloke like that?
Have you seen anything of him recently?
No.
Yes.
Not recently.
How is he?
Fine.
Is he working?
No. He gave up the theatre.
After dinner, I saw them to their car with a promise that I would visit them in Brisbane on my return from Japan. I watched them out of sight and turned to walk down to my hotel in the cool night air. Suddenly, I became quite chillingly aware that someone was walking almost at my shoulder, following me. I found myself looking for his reflection in the glass of the shop windows. I saw a suit that had once been smart, but the face was turned undeviatingly away from the reflection, looking, no, staring. I could feel it staring at me. The compulsion to run was overwhelming, but so was the feeling that he would run after me. I stopped. Suddenly, I had to turn and face him out.
Vincent. It is Vincent, isn't it? Vincent Price.
Yes.
Do you remember me? Greg.
Greg.
With the rose mark on his leg.
Greg Rossmark. Of course, I hardly recognized you. Are you all right?
Let's just say that I'm, sort of sick. You were with her, weren't you?
You mean Jane? Yes, I've just had dinner with her and Richard.
Yes, I saw you. Did she mention me?
Well, she said she hadn't seen you recently.
No. He won't let her, not since he found out.
Found out, huh? Well, is that why you never went to England?
Yes. It, happened again. You see, we, you wouldn't understand.
You mean you ran away together?
No. Everything but that, funnily enough. She wouldn't come with me. She was frightened.
Frightened of what?
Of him, of course. She's terrified of him. Then, when he found out about us, she refused to see me again. She sends my letters back unopened. Every time I phone, she bursts into tears and keeps saying, well, moaning, stay away, for God's sake. Stay away from me. Oh, the way she says it, it tears the heart out of you. And I know it's not what she wants to say, I can tell.
But Greg, maybe she's right.
Oh, no, otherwise he wouldn't be taking her away from here, far away, where he thinks I won't follow. Well, he's wrong. You can tell him from me that he's wrong. I'll follow. Wherever he takes her, I'll follow to the ends of the earth, if need be. You tell her that, will you? To the ends of the earth. To the ends of the earth.
He shuffled off, backwards, into the night, until the shadows seemed to engulf him completely, leaving me with only the recollection of the desperation in his eyes and the strained emotion of his voice. As I turned into my hotel, I knew that I would need a vacation after my work in Japan had finished, knew that I wanted to try my hand at big game fishing. And so, 9 weeks later, I found myself on the open patio of Jane and Rich's new house, eating homemade croissant and drinking fresh ground coffee in the pale sunshine of an early morning in Queensland.
Like some more coffee, Vincent?
Oh, please. And by the way, I congratulate you on your croissant. They're delicious.
I don't know how you can face the day with just that inside of you. It's a woman's breakfast.
Well, I certainly couldn't face a day at sea with a stomach full of bacon, sausage, eggs.
And tomato. Ooh. Don't forget the tomato. It keeps the corpuscles coming the right color. At least that's what my old granny used to say.
Well, mine said they gave you appendicitis.
Have you ever been fishing before, Vincent?
No. No, I never seem to have had the time. And I've never been convinced that I had the patience either.
I know what you mean, but this is nothing like ordinary angling. You see, you don't just sit around and wait for the fish to come. You have to go out and look for them.
Well, you have to know where to look, presumably.
Well, I seem to know where to look for shark.
Richard's landed more sharks in the past fortnight than anyone can remember. He's making quite a name for himself.
What kind of sharks do you get in these waters?
Oh, all the worst sorts, or best sorts, according to your point of view. Tigers, mako, hammerheads. I've even taken a couple of whites, small ones, of course, but even the small ones are man-eaters.
What happens if you meet a big one?
Then you've got a fight on your hand. That could be real sport.
Yes.
Well, I'll just go and load up
a
car.
I'll give you a hand.
Richard will see to it. You finish your coffee in peace.
You stay put. I know where everything goes.
Vincent,
What?
I don't know. I wanted to ask you something.
Ask.
Have you seen anything of Greg?
I saw him that night that I had dinner with you both in Sydney.
Not since then?
No. Why?
Did he say anything about me?
Well, he did say he'd follow you.
Follow me here?
Anywhere. To the ends of the earth. That's what he said.
Oh, God, no, not again.
What's the matter?
He's here. He's in Brisbane.
You've seen him?
Well, he phoned me.
When was that?
Nearly 3 weeks ago.
And you haven't heard from him since?
No. I told him to keep away, to go back to Sydney and forget me.
Well, perhaps he did.
Do you really think so?
Do you?
No.
Go on, Vincent. Time to get moving. Why don't you come, Jane? There's only us two fishing. You could try your hand.
No, thanks. Anyway, I want to go into town today.
What for?
Well, you need more socks for a start. And maybe another shirt.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Drive carefully.
I will. Have a good day. You too, Vincent.
Have a good day. Have a good week. Have a good year, have a good life. What does it mean? As if you can wish anything on anyone, or induce even the most marginal change in patterns of events that have been irrevocably precast in the unyielding concrete of too many yesterdays. A good day it was, then, in the sense that the sky was blue and the sun was warm and the swell of the ocean was at its most pacific. Good boat and a good crew in the shape of Jack, a laconic ex-swagman from the Northern Territories. All it needed was good fish. I wish that had been all we'd got.
Patience, Mr. Price. That's what's needed out here.
But they're not biting today, Jack.
They will. They always do.
Give the bag another bang, Jack.
Righto.
What is that thing?
A dubby bag.
Yeah, just hang it over the side of the boat and it leaves a trail behind you for miles. As soon as anything finds it, it turns and follows it right onto the hook. At least that's the theory.
What have you got inside it?
It's what we call chum. That's a sort of a polite way of saying smelly bits of fish and meat and offal. Especially offal. Anything that'll lose blood and oil into the water.
Yuck. You're beginning to sound like a film I know.
Fish don't know that, do they? They just follow their noses.
Well, I wonder what'll turn up today.
Shark. That's all he seems to be interested
in.
Well,
he'll have to take what comes, though, won't he? I mean, he can't pick and choose.
Well, he does. At least he seems to.
Well, how can he? That's just not possible. You can't just whistle up which fish you want.
No, but you can take all the bait fish out of the dubby bag and just leave bloody meat in there. Then what you put into the water is not so much an oil slick as a blood trail. That'll bring the sharks running.
But you know, Jack, I don't understand this obsession of his with sharks. I really don't.
You can't say I do. Ah, they're not as good as marlin or sailfish. They don't have the heart. Yeah, but the skipper's set on fighting a big great white.
Well, I only hope that's not a death wish.
We got a visitor, Jack.
What's that?
A big one.
Ooh, what is it?
Tiger. About 10 foot of him.
Oh.
Better get into the chair, Mr.
Yes,
Price.
Yes, sir. There we go. Right.
Hurry up. He's circling for the strike.
Steady.
Yeah?
Here he comes.
Okay.
Now, let him run. He's only holding on to it yet.
Uh-huh.
Don't strike until he stops and starts to bite on it.
Right.
And strike hard, and don't stop to pick the daisies. I'll tell you when.
Okay.
He's slowed.
Wait for it.
Uh-huh.
He's turning. Now,
hit him!
I got him this way a ton!
What happened?
The line broke.
What was the breaking strain on that line?
Around 1,000 pounds. That was some fish you had there, Vincent.
Shall I rig another hook?
Yeah, Jack, might as well.
Well, do you think he's still around?
Depends if he's still got the hook in him.
Hey! Hey, there he is!
Where?
Right under the stern.
Oh. What's he doing that for?
He's circling.
Why? We've got nothing out.
Here he comes.
He's going to attack the boat.
Hold on to something.
He's crazy. He's mad as a bloody meat axe.
Hey, get the harpoon.
I've got it. Get off. You crazy bastard. Get off.
What the hell was all that about?
Ooh.
I've never known that happen before.
Well, whatever it was, I'd prefer it not to happen again.
Struth. He was after the dubby bag. What?
See for yourself.
We looked over the stern of the boat. The shark had indeed attacked the dubby bag. He'd torn over half of it away from its rope. The gristly, gory bait, or chum, as Jack called it, was already dispersing through the water. And then I saw the canvas, a shredded piece of the bag that had been torn away from the rest. It was floating precariously just below the surface of the water. On it was a piece of meat, a small piece of meat with a yellowish, bloodied skin. And on the skin was a mark, a distinctive mark in the shape of an open rose. Then the movement of the sea washed it off its canvas raft and committed it forever to the deep. Well, next time you eat fish, you may care to remember this little episode, but I hope it doesn't put you off. I'm still a committed piscivore. With the single exception that I will never, never eat fish and chips in Australia. Flake and chips, as they call it. It's a great favorite out there. But flake, of course, is shark meat. Goodbye. Bon appetit.
That was Vincent Price bringing you The Price of Fear with Bruce Beebe, Louis Fayander, Amanda Murray and Bill Kerr. This story, Fish, was first recounted and dramatised by René Basilico and produced by John Dias.
That was a bit of an odd duck.
Who so, Victor?
It was just kind of odd to hear him so matter-of-factly describe discovering why the tiger shark was adamant on getting at the chum. I mean, if I was in his shoes and saw what was left of Greg just floating to the depths, I would have been freaking out.
With the possible killer on board with you? Not wise, eh?
Yeah, good point. But it was also odd that Price didn't end the show with telling us he reported the murder and Richard was arrested.
How sure are you it was Richard that did the deed and not Jane?
I'm pretty sure, projectionist, that we were supposed to believe it was Richard that murdered poor Greg.
Didn't Jane leave the night before to go into town?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. I still think Richard was the guilty party, but I suppose it's up to the listener. And I think that about wraps up our show for this week. Friends, we hope you will remember that you can listen to the Retro Radio Memories podcast almost every Sunday over at The Retroist. The Retro Radio Memories podcast is now available on iTunes, so the projectionist and I would greatly appreciate it if you might hop on over if you like what we do and give us a review. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. The music we use at the beginning and ending of our show was provided by Peachy. If you have musical needs, you may contact him by email at peachy@retroist.com. A big thanks to the Retroist is in order, of course. When you need your retro fix, just hop on over to The Retroist at www.retroist.com. Until next time, the Retro Radio Memories podcast is off the air.
This has been a Retroist production. Good night and good luck.